You wait.
Gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
Famous jury trials, dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned.
The State versus Henry Kellogg.
Tonight, we bring you a trial unique in the annals of American jurisprudence. Unique because it is one of the most famous in which nearly all the evidence was entirely circumstantial. The trial of Henry Kellogg. On the shores of Lake Erie, one summer day a few years ago, a body was discovered. The lifeless body of a man named Fred Stewart. Washed up on the shore, his head battered in with some heavy weapon. Within 24 hours, Stewart's business partner, Henry Kellogg, was arrested, charged with the murder of his partner. Within a month, he was on trial for his life. It was crowded as the district attorney opened the case for the state.
And we will prove that on the 21st day of last June, Henry Kellogg and his partner, Fred Stewart, entered their office together to sign final papers dissolving their partnership. That was the last time Fred Stewart was ever seen alive. Now, although there were no witnesses to what occurred in that office, the chain of circumstantial evidence is so strong that we can reconstruct that scene. Fred Stewart discovered a shortage in the firm's books. He accused his partner of stealing. And when Henry Kellogg realized he was trapped, he seized a hatchet from the wood box that stood beside the office stove and struck his partner with it, killing him outright. The defendant left the battered body of his partner where it had fallen until late that evening, and then returned and, covering his clothes with a bathrobe to protect them from bloodstains, he carried the body down to a rowboat, rowed far out into the lake, and sank the body with a weight to anchor it. But within a few days, the lifeless body of Fred Stewart was cast up on the shore to proclaim that murder had been done. That is the case we will prove to you step by step. I call my first witness, Dan Chester. Dan Chester. Dan Chester.
Dan Chester, take the stand, please. Do you solemnly swear the evidence you give in this trial shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. What's your profession, Dan?
I drive a hack.
Where were you about 1 o'clock on the afternoon of Sunday, 21st June?
I was hanging around the outside of the building where Mr. Kellogg and Mr. Stewart had their office.
Did you see Mr. Kellogg and Mr. Stewart that afternoon?
Yes. I was hanging around drawing with some of the boys, like I say, when Mr. Kellogg and Mr. Stewart come up about 1 o'clock and go in.
And what happened?
About 15 minutes after that, I hear sounds like a fight going on in their office.
What kind of sounds?
Well, first I heard a big argument, then a couple of socks and groans and stomping feet. It's all over in a couple of minutes, so me and the boys don't pay much attention. Everything's quiet for a while, and then Mr. Kellogg comes out alone and walks away.
Did you notice his appearance?
I noticed he looked kind of white around the gills, and he seemed nervous-like.
Did you see Fred Stewart come out of that building?
No. I never seen him again until I seen him in the morgue.
I see. Now, where were you about 11 o'clock the night of June 21st?
Well, I'd been out on the lake night fishing. And as I was coming in, I passed a boat, see? And I look, and I see it's Henry Kellogg, and he's got a bathrobe on.
Anything else?
There's something that looks like a body flopped down in the boat.
Did you hail him?
Yeah, but he just rolls away as fast as he can.
When did you see the defendant next?
About 7:30 next morning.
Where?
In front of his office.
And what was he doing?
Well, he come out of his office with a rug in his arms. Yeah, I could see that part of the rug had been cut away. Then he takes a mop and a pail and washes out the office, and then he sweeps the rug and takes it back in.
Bring that rug up here, please.
Yes, sir.
Now, you recognize this rug, Dan?
Yeah, that's the one.
I offer it in evidence.
No objection.
Let it be received and marked.
I want to show this rug to the jury. Please notice those dark spots that have been circled with chalk. We will show, by an analysis of the state chemist, that those spots are bloodstains.
Your Honor, I object. That is not the proper way to introduce that evidence.
Your Honor, I am going to introduce the report at the proper time.
I sustain the objection. Let's have no more about those stains.
Oh, very well. Ladies and gentlemen, I will also ask you to note that large sections of this rug have been cut away entirely. You can close up now, thank you. That's all, Dan. Your witness.
Now, let's see, Dan. You say you saw Mr. Kellogg about 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Yes, sir.
And again at about 11 that night.
Yes.
And again at 7:30 the following morning.
Yes.
Remarkable series of coincidence. What were you doing near his office at 7:30 in the morning, looking for a fare?
Well, no, I wasn't doing nothing in particular.
Isn't 7:30 in the morning a rather peculiar time for you to be in that area? Are you usually even out of bed by 7:30?
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. Dan, where did you come from before you came here?
Back east.
You didn't just happen to land here and recognize an old friend, did you? A friend you'd known back east.
No.
You didn't find an old friend that you had something on, and you didn't make him pay you not to give him away.
No, that's a lie. It ain't true.
Your Honor, I object. Wasn't that man's name Fred Stewart?
Well,
I object. All this is absurd and totally unfounded.
On what do you base that charge, Mr. Pepper?
On the fact that the witness's bank record shows regularly weekly deposits. And Mr. Stewart's identical withdrawal. And the amount the witness banked last year was far more than he could have earned by driving a hack.
I object. We're not trying the witness here. We're trying Henry Kellogg for murder.
Overruled. You may inquire further.
Weren't you blackmailing Fred Stewart?
No.
Where did you get that money?
Well, I found it.
You kept on finding the same amount every week.
No, I found it all at once. I just banked it that way.
Uh-huh. Dan, when did you first hear that Fred Stewart was dissolving his partnership with the defendant?
I don't know. No.
Didn't you hear it from some casual remark let drop by those two as they entered their office that Sunday afternoon of June 21st?
No.
Didn't you realize Fred Stewart was running out on you? Didn't you wait until the defendant had gone? And then didn't you sneak into the office and demand a payoff from Stewart?
No, that's a lie. It's all right.
Didn't he refuse to give you anything? And didn't you murder him?
No, it's a lie. I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him.
That's all.
Call Dr. Joseph Tully.
Joseph Tully. Joseph Tully. Joseph Tully.
Dr. Tully, your office is in the same building as the defendant's.
Yes, it's the opposite his on the ground floor.
Did you see the defendant on the morning of June 22nd?
Yes, at about 7:30 in the morning at his office.
Describe the circumstances, please.
Well, I smelled something burning, so I came out of my office to investigate. The door of Kellogg's office was open, and I saw the rug had been taken up and the floor washed.
Yes.
Something was burning in the stove, making an awful smell.
Where was the defendant?
He was out on the sidewalk, sweeping the rug.
What did you do?
I went to see what was burning. I meant to try and stir it up so it wouldn't smoke and make that frightful smell.
Yes.
When I opened the stove, I saw that it was pieces of the rug that were being burned.
What did you do?
Oh, I looked around. Curious rather than suspicious. And I noticed a piece of paper in the scrap basket.
What kind of paper?
A sheet of newspaper. What attracted my attention to it was a brownish smear on it.
Yes?
I picked up the paper and studied that stain. I didn't really suspect anything wrong, but I was curious because I was pretty certain that paper was stained with blood.
That is objected to.
Strike out that last part about the blood.
What did you do, Doctor?
I took the paper into my own office and tested that stain.
And what did you find?
I found that the paper was saturated with human blood.
Doctor, I show you a sheet of newspaper. Do you recognize it?
Yes, that's the bloodstained paper I found in Mr. Kellogg's office.
Doctor, did you tell Mr. Kellogg what you had done?
No, I was merely curious. Until I learned that Fred Stewart had disappeared. Then I thought I'd better turn that paper over to the police with the report of my analysis of the stain.
I see. Thank you, Doctor. Your witness.
Doctor, what are your office hours? 9 to 12 in the morning.
Did you have an emergency case on the morning of Monday, June 22nd?
No.
Then what were you doing at your office at 7:30 in the morning?
I was working.
What time did you arrive at your office?
Well, as a matter of fact, I spent the night there.
You spent the night at your office? Was that a usual practice of yours?
No, but it happened I was working the night before on some analysis, and when I got through it was so late, I decided to sleep on the office sofa instead of going home.
When did you start working on this analysis, Doctor? I mean, what time did you go to your office on Sunday?
About 2 Sunday afternoon.
You were in that building which Fred Stewart was seen to enter and never seen alive again. You were there from 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon until 7:30 the following morning?
Yes.
Working on some analysis?
Yes.
Doctor, you have a daughter, have you not?
Yes.
Wasn't she engaged to the deceased Fred Stewart? Didn't he lead her to believe he intended to marry her?
No, that's a lie, and I won't answer any more questions about it.
You answer the questions I asked you. Didn't you hear that Fred Stewart was dissolving his partnership and intending to leave town?
No.
Didn't you confront him in his office that Sunday afternoon and demand that he marry your daughter?
This is outrageous. How dare you insinuate anything against my daughter's good name?
When he refused point blank, didn't you in a blind rage strike down the man who had dishonored your home?
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
Dr. Charlie, didn't you fake that bloodstained newspaper as evidence against Henry Kellogg to divert suspicion from yourself? Can you show that the newspaper you say he was found was ever in the defendant's office at all?
What?
That's all, Doctor.
The bitter struggle of circumstantial evidence opposed to conflicting circumstance continued as the prosecution brought out further deadly testimony against Henry Kellogg, showing that the books of the Kellogg-Stewart firm were some $3,000 short, that the hatchet found in Kellogg's office exactly fitted the wounds that caused the death of Fred Stewart, that traces of human blood had been found not only on the carpet, but in the cracks of the office floor. But the most crushing evidence of all was yet to come. And now we take you back to the courtroom where the prosecution was winding up its case with a final witness, a boy of 15 named Richard Green.
Dick, you were Mr. Kellogg's office boy, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
You frequently visited the defendant in prison before the trial.
Yes.
Did he secretly give you certain pieces of paper that you were to put into envelopes and mail for him?
Well,
now, tell the truth, son. You were caught red-handed, you know.
Well, yes. Yes, he did.
I show you some papers and ask if you recognize them.
Yes, I do.
I offer them in evidence.
No objection.
Let them be received and marked.
What were you to do with these pieces of paper?
I was to put each one in an envelope and mail it to you.
I want the jury to see these pieces of paper. You'll notice that the message has been marked out on each with a pin. And these are the messages the defendant wished to send me. Kellogg is innocent. I killed Fred Stewart. And here's another. You have got the wrong man. Kellogg is innocent. The other messages are similar. And they were all written by the defendant himself. Cross-examine the witness if you care to, Mr. Pepper.
No question.
The prosecution rests, Your Honor.
The defense opened what looked like a losing fight and called Henry Kellogg himself as the first defense witness.
Mr. Kellogg, will you tell the jury what you knew of Fred Stewart before you went into business with him?
Well, really almost nothing. Stewart came here about 3 years ago. And about a year after he'd been here, he suggested putting some capital in my business, going into partnership with me.
How much did he put in?
About $5,000.
When did he intimate to you that he wanted to dissolve the partnership?
About a week before his... before his death. He told me he wanted to leave here and asked me to keep the news of our splitting up a secret. The reasons he gave for the secrecy were purely social.
I see. Now, did you have the books of the firm audited before you dissolved?
Well, no, ours was quite a small firm. It didn't seem worthwhile. Books appeared to balance, so we simply figured out our share. Sunday, after church, we went to the office and signed the final papers dissolving our partnership.
Did you and he quarrel during that meeting?
Yes, but that had nothing to do with the business arrangement.
What was the quarrel about?
Well, he said something about a certain young lady, and I didn't like what he said, so I hit him. He hit me back. Then he apologized for what he'd said, but he didn't know I felt that way about her. Well, that was the end of it.
Were you injured by the blow you received?
Well, he caught me on the nose, and I had quite a severe nosebleed.
Did you catch the blood in a handkerchief, or did it fall freely?
While we were trading punches, it splattered over everything. When we stopped, I used a handkerchief and wiped my hands on a piece of newspaper.
Then what did you do?
We said goodbye. Fred said he wanted to write some letters on the office typewriter, so I left him.
And you did not go back to the office again that day?
I did not.
You arrived at the office very early next morning.
Yes, I had some important clients coming in, and I wanted to get the place straightened up and Jim's stuff cleared out of the way before they got there.
You took out the rug and swept it?
Yes, I had to cut it away from the safe and the stove. The parts there were worn and frayed away, so I cut off the worn part, too. I put the pieces in the stove. Then I mopped and swept the floor, straightened out Fred's papers and stuff.
What else happened that day?
Well, I went over to the bank to draw some money, and I found my account was about $3,000 short. Cash that was listed on the books as having been deposited had never gone into the bank at all.
Well, what did you do?
I tried to find Stewart, but I found he'd disappeared. I thought he'd absconded until his body was washed up out of the lake.
Thank you, Mr. Kellogg. Cross-examine.
Mr. Kellogg, what were you doing out on the lake Sunday night?
I prefer not to answer that question. It has nothing to do with this case.
Oh, you prefer not to answer. What was the body in the stern of your boat?
My answer is the same.
You prefer not to answer.
Mr. Kellogg, when you went to your office at 7:30 Monday morning, wasn't it so that you could destroy the evidence against you unobserved?
No, it was not.
Can you deny that you did destroy evidence?
Well, I don't know. I certainly didn't mean to.
And can you deny that you attempted to manufacture evidence after you were arrested and thrown into prison? Didn't you deliberately forge those pinprick letters?
Well, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
That's all, Mr. Kellogg. Call Irene Garrison.
No, don't call her. I don't want you to call her. I forbid it.
Order. Sit down, Mr. Kellogg.
But I don't
sit
want...
Sit down. Call the witness.
Irene Garrison. Irene Garrison, take the stand, please. You solemnly swear the evidence you give in this trial will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Miss Garrison, what is your occupation?
I'm a teacher in the public school here.
Where were you at 11 o'clock on Sunday night, June 21st?
I was out on the lake in a boat.
Alone?
No. I was with the defendant, Henry Kellogg.
You were with him when the taxi driver, Dan Chester, saw him on the lake?
Yes. I was the body in the stern of the boat.
You did not come forward with this evidence at the inquest.
Mr. Kellogg told me not to. You see, we'd been swimming. That's why he was wearing a bathrobe.
Yes?
Well, Henry said that if people knew that I'd been out swimming with him alone late at night, people would begin to gossip. You know how it is in a small place like this. And since I teach young children, I'm particularly open to criticism.
Yes, of course. How long were you with the defendant that night?
From about 9 to 12 o'clock.
I see. Thank you, Miss Garrison. Your witness.
Miss Garrison, you, who are a guardian of the morals of the little children entrusted to you, admit that you behaved in a way that would cause you to become the subject of gossip and scandal?
Yes.
You expect the jury to believe that a woman of your character would hesitate to tell a lie?
Because I went swimming with a man I'm engaged to, does it follow that I'm a bad character or a liar?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg proposed to me that night, and I accepted him. It was a beautiful, warm moonlight night. Henry suggested a swim. We both felt a little crazy, so we went. And you want people to believe that he came straight from committing a murder to propose to me? Well, I know it isn't possible.
You love Henry Kellogg very much, don't you?
Yes.
If you knew he was a murderer, would you love him even then?
Yes. Even then.
That's all, Miss Garrison.
The taking of testimony was concluded, and the defense began his summation to the jury.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I would have you note that the entire case for the prosecution is based on circumstantial evidence. There is not one fact, nor one occurrence, that can be pointed to as absolute irrefutable proof that the defendant committed the crime he is charged with. I say to you that I could make out as good a case against the cab driver, Dan Chester. What was he doing at the Kellogg Stewart office that Sunday noon? What was he doing there at 7:30 the next morning? Was he blackmailing Fred Stewart? I think I could prove that he was, and make out at least as good a case for murder against him as the prosecution has against Henry Kellogg. What of Dr. Tully? He was admittedly in the building where the prosecution says the murder took place. He admits he was there from 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon until the next morning. He had the strongest of all motives to kill the man who had dishonored his daughter. Now, as to those pinprick letters which Henry Kellogg admits he wrote, when people are accused of very serious crimes, they will often do very foolish things to try and establish their innocence. I think these letters the defendant wrote are examples of that kind of behavior. You cannot let them sway your judgment because Henry Kellogg is innocent. I say he is innocent because all of his actions are consistent only with innocence and not with guilt. Ladies and gentlemen, there can be only one verdict on the facts: full and complete acquittal.
The prosecution will sum up.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the defense counsel doesn't like my case because it's circumstantial. Well, I say to you that circumstantial evidence is the best evidence there is. We know the firm of Kellogg and Stewart. We know that there was a shortage in the books of that firm. We know that there was a quarrel and a struggle after which Fred Stewart was never seen alive again. We know that the defendant was out on the lake late that night, where he would have to be to dispose of the body. I think we can discount the testimony of the girl, Irene Garrison. She's obviously so infatuated with the defendant that she would swear to anything to help it. Now, what else do we know? Well, the next morning, we find the defendant at his office at a most unusually early hour, busily destroying evidence. It was only by the merest chance that he was actually observed doing this. And why, you may ask, didn't he destroy this evidence during the night? The answer is, it was too dangerous. Finally, there was the clinching evidence of those fake letters the defendant wrote in prison trying to confuse the authorities. That is the clearest confession of guilt that you could wish for. When a man tries to destroy evidence and to fake evidence, he is presumed to be guilty. Ladies and gentlemen, your verdict must be guilty of murder in the first degree. There can be no other.
And so the jury retired. And in a moment, we will return to hear their verdict. And now, the jury's decision. It was not guilty. There was great controversy over the verdict. Some saying Henry Kellogg was lucky to escape the penalty of murder. Others saying he was entitled to do so, as no real case had been proved against him. There were too many loopholes, too many possibilities. And the jury, being cautious of convicting the innocent, so justified in their verdict that set Henry Kellogg free. Famous jury trials, the drama of the courts drawn from actual courtroom cases. This is a Grace Gibson radio production directed by Lawrence H. Cecil.